Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Fields going deep down the middle of the field. Playing center field. Petrie the interception at the 41. Have a second interception of the day for the rookie Jalen Petrie.
I gotta be better. That's my fault.
This is the NFL, man. It's gonna feel like for about, you know, a quarter, a half a game, and then you're right in the game. It's gonna come down to a one-score game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
that's how it goes.
You gotta move on, right? We're all good.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't even matter. Last play, it's the last play, right? It's time to move on next. You'll be just fine, right? Putting the ball right back in your hands, so I'm gonna trust you, right?
Hey, let's get seven, baby. Let's go.
Inside this building, I can tell you for sure no one's lost trust in anyone. We're just going to keep chipping away and find a room, trying to find ways to improve.
It's the pregame show. That is the voice of Ryan Poles, and he was on with our sister station, WBBM, this morning and expressing confidence in the quarterback. And you heard there, Justin Fields mic'd up during that Houston game, and boy, he was down, and he threw a bad pick, and he was saying, it's my fault, and Luke Getsy is, hey, we're going right back to you, we're giving you the ball, we're staying with you. Now, there's a big difference between putting a guy back out on the field and actually letting him throw the ball and trusting him to do so, and we all know, we all heard him in the post game last week saying he played like trash, and everybody is evaluating the quarterback at all times. And I'm just curious, when you look at the numbers, what constitutes a breakthrough to you guys? What is it that would make you believe that the quarterback's arrived?
To me, it's just, you know, when I put on that all 22 or even just watch the game live and hopefully today that he lets it rip. Everybody says, you know, let it rip. When the guy's open, throw it. Don't get spooked by the pocket collapsing a little bit, but there's scheme calls and calls where guys are wide open and he's not making that throw. So to me, it's going to be when I'm watching this game, is he hitting the open man? Are his eyes going to the right spot? I got a funny story. So I'm watching the all 22 and I pulled my wife over and I said, listen, where is Justin looking? She goes, right there at number 85. I go, yes, you know that. He knows that. He's just not throwing the ball. I mean, it's that obvious. So that to me would constitute progress. If you start seeing him make the throws that need to be made, the ones that are schemed, the ones that are drawn up on the grease board, you work on all week, it's going to be open, he's going to be there if they're in this coverage, throw it to him. That's what I want to see.
And I think that last week was the first time, when we went on a Bears post game live, I was on there with Luke Kanellis, Jim Miller, I said it was the first time I've seen Justin Fields look not even confused, just look kind of shell-shocked, you know, like playing with hesitation that didn't just come from what I describe as kind of his methodical nature of going through his reads and the mechanics being a little methodical sometimes. He's trying to quicken those things up, but he looked out of sorts. You know, he looked, you know, like his confidence had been shaken. That's not a Justin Fields I'd ever seen at either the collegiate level and covering all his time at Ohio State or now here and covering his time with the Bears. I don't anticipate that lasting. But that being said, the audio that this does just played for us there with him on the sideline with Luke Getsy, in addition to just scheming things up, that's a part of that relationship and that trust that needs to be there that will continue to develop between the offensive play caller and the quarterback and continuing to instill the confidence in Justin Fields that his mistakes, while from the outside world, and Justin Fields has said, he's out there, he gets his notifications on Twitter, he feels and hears and sees and reads the way that fans are reacting to every little thing that he does. That being said, he's got to be able to compartmentalize that, and within a game that the Bears aren't necessarily, like, you know, they're not calling the game like they think he and the passing attack can lead the way for them, because it can't yet. But he can't necessarily let that erode his confidence, and he can't let individual mistakes erode his confidence. And that's one space that he's always been really good at up until what we saw last week. That's the first time, in my opinion, I've seen it look like Justin Fields' confidence had been shaken, had eroded within a game. But it's not shocking. It's not surprising, because that happens to young quarterbacks in this sport. And it feels to me, guys, like we're not – I don't hear, I guess, a level of patience in watching the development arc of Justin Fields. It feels like that patience from the city is already being sapped. And my only – I almost texted you about this the other day, Mother. I was driving around listening to you and David take some callers, and – It feels to me like it's got to be just like Trubisky shrapnel that just lingers from that. That's where the city feels like we're on like year six of a first round quarterback that hasn't developed yet. When for Justin Fields, we're just early in year two of Justin Fields' development arc. But it feels like the city of Chicago feels like this is year six of waiting on the Bears' young quarterback to develop. And it seems like the patience is already sapping in Chicago, wanting this finished product at quarterback that isn't necessarily a realistic expectation yet.
If you just follow the storyline of his season, it's fascinating, because obviously, you know, we knew all the offseason work. He and Mooney were together. He was meeting with guys. He was doing a ton of work. It was the new scheme and all this stuff. Then you get to that Green Bay game, and he's asked about the rivalry, and he says something along the lines of, well, you know, it hurts the guys in the locker room who are working so hard. The fans aren't working on that. Whatever he said, he gets a ton of abuse over that. He ends up sitting down and talking to the media on not last Wednesday, the Wednesday before, and we see a different side of him, the charismatic personality and all of the positive. He's going to show more of himself, and you thought, wow, that could be a really good moment for the guy. Then comes the game, then comes the lack of production, and clearly, when you're not giving the guy the ball, I mean, I think it's fascinating. I think the Bear fans booed the Bears off the field at halftime against Houston because they wanted them to make a play, to call the timeouts, to do that. We got a big explanation from Eberflus. If they do call the timeouts, who knows if they win the game, right? They won the game the way they won the game, yep. And no one's clearly pleased with that, because you want them to win the game with a lot more, more style than substance, maybe. I don't know how you'd term it. Then he comes out on Wednesday. Then he talks about playing like trash. He comes out on Wednesday, and he was very reticent. He looked like a guy who's taken too much of a beating just psychologically. And then I'm watching him on that thing that we just played, and he was so down in that moment that the coach is like, hey, we're going back to you. You got to let that go. He's almost reinforcing it by kind of also – hoping that the guy's listening to him in a way. You know what I'm saying? It was the first time where I love watching this kid play, and I watched him in college, and I really was expecting different things from him this year. I understand what quarterback development is. I understand we haven't seen it in Chicago, and people get confused by that. So you can't draw conclusions. You have to let this unfold. But he's taking a lot of abuse. And I worry about that and how it will affect him. And I don't even know what a breakthrough looks like today. I mean, if they go 3-1, is anyone going to be happy unless the kid throws for 300 yards, which they don't have to do in order to go 3-1 with this team?
Doesn't feel like it. People are going to be satisfied.
Yeah, it doesn't.
No, and to me, I think what I would like to see is, who is it, Spiegel and Parkins have Trent Dilfer on, who was a game manager. Become a game manager right now with this offense. With the running game you have, just give me that. You know, give me 242 yards, maybe one touchdown or whatever. Just get me, you know, that you're managing the game well enough, and then you can become the great player. And the one thing I want to talk about, too, is after listening to that and what the coaches, how they're coaching him during a game, I love it. I love that you're staying positive with him. I think he needs that at this age. But I think as a coach, and this is one thing that makes better coaches, you figure out what makes this young man tick. It might be he gets coached hard during the week, and then you come out on Sunday and you're all positive. It might be you're all positive all week. You have to find out what makes him tick and what's the best way to coach this young man. But on Sundays, I'm a believer in you put all that hard work in from Monday to, you know, before the kickoff on Sunday. That's the time the coaches, you know, you coach during the week, you go out there and you play hard on Sunday and you stay behind them the entire game. And I like to hear that.
And Mully, from a from an improvement perspective, it's within the walls at Halas Hall, it's going to be more incremental, and them watching and charting every moment and every decision Justin Fields made during the preseason and that he's making during the regular season game so far, that's where the improvement or lack thereof that they're seeing would be a part of the evaluation of whether or not they're wanting to stick with him for the long term. It won't be nearly as obvious to us until he starts throwing for 250 and 300 and having no interceptions. But even the moment I talked about it on the post show here on the station last Sunday after the game ended, even that first interception, like the second interception was awful. It was just a throw it up and hope decision that he made, throwing it into traffic to Darnell Mooney. The first pick where they rolled coverage and he knew precisely where he wanted to go with the football, that to me was an indication of Justin Fields reading things accurately and quickly and then decisively getting the football out of his hands in a way that he hasn't frequently done as an amateur or as a pro quarterback. But what he did was he's not at the point yet where as he processes that information quickly in his head, not as methodically as he normally does, but he processed it really quickly. Now he's got to get to the point where he's not necessarily as he quickens and rushes his mechanics, where his mechanics aren't as flawed as they were on that pass. Because up to this point, when Justin Fields knows where to go with the ball, he's usually been a really accurate quarterback. The issue has been when he gets a little bit hesitant or indecisive, or he feels like he's throwing late. But in that moment, he read it. He got it out of his hands right on time. And then the ball sails on him because it doesn't come out of his hands. The release point is off, and he throws it, and it flutters, and it goes further towards the middle of the field as opposed to putting it on the tight end Cole Kmet's body. But that, to me, even just incrementally, it's an interception. That is an example of actual growth from Justin Fields, though. That interception he threw in the game, because we did see more of a rapid processing of the information and quickening his mechanics, but he's just not accustomed to that yet. The rapid nature of the mental aspect of it and him knowing, like, all right, I got it. I see what's happening. And now this is an opportunity for a chunk play where I've read this and I'm confident. I know what I'm looking at, but now I got to quicken my body up. I got to get my lower body in a position to deliver it. I got to get this thing out of my hands quickly before the defense converges on it. And all those things happening, his body, it's not muscle memory for him yet. So right. The ball floats on him. It flutters. It drifts towards the middle. And it's an easy interception for the defense. So for us, we see, damn, that's an ugly looking interception when Cole Kmet was open. The Bears looking at that on film, I would imagine Luke Getsy's in the meeting room with Justin Fields saying, you know what, man, you got it right. Just put the ball on him. It's all that comes down to. But a Justin Fields of last year, a Justin Fields of last month may not have necessarily even seen that as quickly, let alone gotten the ball out of his hands in the timing that it would have taken. Now he's got to process that as quickly as he did and allow his body to, in a muscle memory perspective, put it on the tight end. So even that first interception from the game, through my lens, that was improvement from Justin Fields.
When we talk about his progress, part of it, there was a screen pass to Darnell Mooney that Mooney, he just dropped it. And we know that Darnell Mooney came out after the game, set up the jugs machine, and started practicing catching the football. He's super frustrated too. I guess the question is, and you know, Tom Thayer said something I thought was really interesting when he said that that Equanimeous St. Brown ought to be the number one receiver or the guy that is featured in that role, and that because he's obviously got a much larger catch radius because he's a 6'5" guy than Darnell Mooney. And Darnell Mooney, there was a pass across the middle of the field, he went up. And he dropped the ball. I mean, it was overthrown, but he did get his hands on it, and that is a play that number one receivers in the NFL make quite often. What do you think about the idea of trying to get him a bigger receiver type? Now, it didn't work last year with Allen Robinson, but he was injured and in and out. I just wonder how drastic changes have to come and why things aren't working between – Fields and Mooney after all the work they put in.
Yeah, I don't know why either, because in the preseason you saw Mooney go up and get it a couple times.
Yeah.
So I think he has the ability to do it, and maybe it's just I don't know receivers play as well as anybody or what their mindset is while they're going through a game, but I guess it's like anything else though, that you get into a flow. You catch one ball, you catch two balls, you catch three balls. You're getting a flow throughout the game. He's not getting anything thrown to him. I mean, Justin Fields isn't throwing the ball, but he's not getting into the flow of the game. That could be part of it as well. I understand what Tom's saying about the big catch radius and all that, but you are hoping Darnell Mooney turns into a number one receiver in this league. So to me, you play him as that to see if he is that. And then you're going to evaluate, as the season goes along, do you need to bring in another receiver or can he take that step to be the number one receiver? So I understand what he's saying right now to do that, but I would not do that because I'm still evaluating other players on this team as well as Justin Fields, and Darnell Mooney is definitely one of those guys.
Developmental. I love the fact that we've heard the word development or some other form of developmental from Matt Eberflus and Ryan Poles more than we did in the entire time the previous regime was running the Bears. A part of that development is, like Patrick's talking about, recognizing and getting proof positive whether or not Darnell Mooney can become a number one receiver. Can he be a number one receiver on a quality passing attack? Through three games, it feels a little quick to me to say that we're going to make Equanimeous St. Brown the number one target. That being said, it doesn't mean that you can't make EQ just a bigger part of the offense. That's already developing anyway. But I think to Tom's point that it sounds like he was making there, we've seen a couple of examples here of Justin as he's, if the ball floats on him a little bit, or even like the pass he tried to throw to Cole Kmet where he like changed, he was beginning to roll and he like changes his arm slot and, Cole Kmet, I've talked about it almost on a weekly basis for 2 years now, where he's just got to find a way to come up with grabs. And it was nice to see him make a couple of open catches in the game. But you need a guy who's in kismet with the quarterback, who knows when it's time to kind of sit down in a window, who, if the quarterback puts it anywhere near his frame on a contested grab, can be confident in making that catch and extending his hands away from his body to do it. So all around, man, you need playmakers to step forward for a young quarterback as well. You got to have Justin Fields improve and develop, but in testing the development of this offense, there's patience that goes with that as well. And the patience for Darnell Mooney will be, how do we get him more involved in this offense? And even if there's going to be games where he's only got 5 targets instead of 10 targets, how many of those can he come down with while we continue to kind of grow this passing attack? And, Equanimeous St. Brown isn't a guy who's shown himself to be capable of being a number one receiver yet either.
Yeah.
But expanding his role in the offense, we are seeing that. And I think he's earned that. Going ahead all the way to making him number one, it feels like a little early for that to me.
All right, we've got to get to a break here. You're listening to the pregame show, guys. I wanna ask you about the Tua situation. Tua Tagovailoa obviously knocked out of a game, and the concussion protocol questioned, and everything that happened from a guy that was hurt on a Sunday and then played on a Thursday night. Pat, you were on the field when Jay Cutler at this stadium. Yep. Was hit, what was it, 9 times sacked in the first
9
half?
Times, and yeah.
It's just an extraordinary thing, and he suffered a concussion there as well. Want to talk to you guys about that. We'll do that when we get back. It is, of course, the pregame show here on The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you.
I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I mean, they train us to run through walls and destroy our bodies, and then they're not there to help us once it's done. And people have to be honest about that. So, what they did to Tua is like knowing somebody is drunk, and the guy said, "But I want to drive home." And you go, "Well, you told me you did, so that's fine. I gave you the keys, and you go kill. You know, you would die in a car crash." And you know, I mean, that's basically what they did. We're just lucky that Tua didn't die. But you know, since it happened, I had some reporter reach out to me to share a story about a kid who even took 2 weeks off. A high school football player, I think in Illinois, took 2 weeks off and came back and had what looks like second impact syndrome. Like, it happens. It really happens. People do die. The kid's still in a coma.
It's the pregame show here on The Score, and that is the voice of Chris Nowinski. He is the co-founder, CEO of the Concussion Legacy Foundation, which is a nonprofit leading the fight against concussions and CTE, and it's dedicated to improving the lives of those who have been impacted. And gentlemen, there's a couple of really strange things going on here with the Tua situation. I mean, here's a guy that was knocked out of a game on a Sunday, and he came back. He was wobbly, and he came back and played. And then they start him again on a Thursday night, and he never went into concussion protocol. They claimed that it was a back injury, and then he gets hit on Thursday night, and he has the whole the fencing reflex, and it's horrible. And the broadcast, the radio broadcast, I think it's Tony Baselli, is like, "Oh, I think he broke his finger because he's had a seizure." It's just a horrific looking injury. Then he comes out of the game. Now, since then, the unaffiliated neurotrauma consultant that was used has been fired. And it's pretty extraordinary when you think of the fact that, they can say whatever they want. And we got a bunch of phone calls on it. It's a really hot topic. And some guy said, "Well, I collapsed at the Jewel. I had a back injury and I went down at the Jewel," and it happens. People collapse for other reasons. But I don't think he collapsed on a Sunday and played in an NFL game on Thursday, right? So that's part of this issue. It's hard to figure out how this can go on. And you worry for the health of football. If you have concussion protocol, if you have these safety guidelines, the last thing I'll say is, If Miami didn't think that there was a problem with Tua, then why did the hell did they activate the third quarterback? Their third quarterback, Sky Thompson, was active for that game. Who keeps three quarterbacks anymore?
When I saw the initial one 2 weeks ago, the Sunday ago, when his linemen and teammates are holding him up. And we've all had concussions, right? And you go to help your teammate. They're not the way they were holding him was not because of his back. It was because they looked him in the eye and they knew he was concussed. At least that's what I saw from when I looked at the TV. And I just don't understand how the NFL allowed that to happen, for him to come back into a game after you watch the video. I'm floored with all of that. I'm floored with the way the NFLPA is dealing with all this and why they're not protecting us more. Us as players, I it's a very difficult situation to talk about. But I don't know if you guys listened to Olin's podcast this week. He's friends with Tua and the family, and he knows the family really well. He knows what type of player he is, that he's like, he's going to go back out there and play. He's kind of the same lineage as Olin. Like, he's going to try to tough it out and be out there for his teammates. And when you hear that and you know that about a player, that's when a team has to step in. That's when a doctor has to step in. Somebody has to step in and say, nope, I'm taking you away from danger. This is our job. I understand and I appreciate you, your willingness to go back out there and help your team win and play with your teammates. But in this situation, there is no way in hell you're going back out there. This is your safety. This is for you. And that's just, that needed to be done. And it's very confusing what's going on. Hopefully we can get to the bottom of this and get a better protocol that this never happens to a young man on the football field again.
There are so many aspects of how it's baked into the culture and how that ends up with Tua Tagovailoa playing a game 5 days after appearing to experience some sort of a concussive result in the initial game. And, you know, like Olin's talking about, he knows the family really well. I've been around the family over the years. He, you know, Tua played in this high school All-America game that I call every year in San Antonio. So I got to meet him and his parents and family back then. And his brother Talia plays in Maryland right now. So I've been around Talia and watching his career develop over the years. So they are as tough and rugged and workmanlike a group of people, the Tagovailoa family, as you could hope to be around. And they do so many things through passion and through their faith and just pouring themselves into wanting to be excellent. And Tua has this opportunity this season, several years into his NFL career, where now he feels like he has been ready for this stage, and the Dolphins have finally surrounded him with talent and spent resources to say, Tua, here's your new offensive coach. Here's the playmakers you got available on offense. Let's go win some games. And he's tough as nails already, but then now he's seeing this opportunity to take his career to another stratosphere, and it's going well up to that moment. And to the point Patrick's talking about, where we should be beyond. We thought perhaps we were beyond the point where, from a player's perspective, where it's expected that the players, that we have to save ourselves from ourselves. Is there a responsibility on Tua Tagovailoa in this scenario? I 100% think that there is, while at the same time, viewing it through realistic glasses here, the athlete, the competitor, not just in football, but in a variety of sports, will more often than not attempt to push themselves back into action just because of the competitive juices that flow there. That being said, that doesn't mean that's the proper decision. That's why these adjustments have been made over the years, to have what should be, what's thought of as being independent arbiters evaluating these things. And so to hear reports that it wasn't head trauma that he left the game with, that it was some kind of a back problem, and how, you know, it would be laughable if it wasn't worthy of tears to hear that's what they're reporting, that it was a back issue and not head trauma, and then to see what happens on Thursday night. There's a level of courage that's associated with that, but you need to save the player. This system needs to protect the athlete from reckless decisions that put themselves long-term in jeopardy. And there was a thought that maybe we were getting to a point where at least a system was in place that could protect us from those moments. And, you know, there have been a lot that have been protected from that, but this was a really prominent example of a popular player in a team that's doing some really nice things, where obviously the Dolphins failed, the NFL failed, Tua failed, the independent arbiters. There was a failure at so many levels to protect Tua from himself.
True. And one thing you mentioned, you said the word culture, and Anthony, you and I played through it. The culture about concussions started to shift into the proper way it should be talked about. You know, when guys would get dinged, when I first started, I was like, oh, he's not that bad, he can get back out there. Now, if a guy gets dinged, you're like, no, he doesn't need to be out there. You're right. Not judging him at all. You say, you take the time whenever you're ready to come back, whatever the doctor clears you, you come back. But earlier in my career, it was like, oh, he's only going to miss, you know, maybe he'll miss the second half. He'll be back next week. Should be a practice on Wednesday.
Snap this ammonia pack real quick. Rub it under your nose. Yeah. Like, let's roll.
So we saw the culture change while I played, and I thought it was great. And I was happy to see that, and needed to be done, because I've got former teammates I've played with now that aren't as healthy as they should be from head trauma. But this maybe, and unfortunately it had to happen this way, gets the NFL to take the next step, to maybe even help a little bit more. I don't know what it's going to be, but they can hopefully come together with something. But that next step needs to happen, because the culture has changed. The player in the locker room doesn't judge a concussion the way they used to 20, 30 years ago. And I think that's great that's happened, and the guys have allowed that to happen within the players in that locker room, and that's the way it should be.
I, you know,
obviously have been around the NFL a long time, and I know players just talking to them that live in fear of how this will affect them moving forward in their lives. That there is this sort of idea that, you know, you just, you gut it out, you do it, and then so often if something like this happens, they'll get a phone call from family members. How are you doing? How do you feel? It just feels like there is a scare thing going on that never existed before because the awareness of it never existed before. And so many tragic kind of ends to so many players' lives, let alone careers.
And I still think they're learning. Well, I'll just give you an example. I got concussed against the Philadelphia Eagles, hit my head on that hard turf of that old stadium. And I came to the sideline, and I just wasn't with it. And the question they asked, they said, "Where are you?" And I look up, and I see Philadelphia on the scoreboard. So I say, "Philadelphia." And they're like, "Oh, you're good. You can go back in." Now, obviously, they're still learning how to deal with this, but there's still a lot more progress that needs to be done. But I'm glad that it's changed. And, you know, it's a tough injury to judge, I guess, because you don't see a broken bone. You don't see an MRI sprained elbow or anything like that. So it's a tough thing to learn or to judge. And I think we're still learning, and hopefully this helps us learn more and we can correct some of our mistakes we've had with concussions in the NFL.
Obviously, you know, none of us are neurologists per se, right. But I mean, you know, not every player, even when you see a guy get wobbly, not every player, because there's a baseline test that everyone takes at the start of every season. And they get asked a series of questions just to see like where you're at cognitively, what types of responses are you able to come up with at a moment's notice? And then if you do suffer what appears to potentially be head trauma, then how do you answer that same series of questions? Are you as quick? Are you as sharp? Or if you weren't quick and sharp the first time, are you even less quick and sharp with some of these answers the next time around? How's your recall on some of these things? And so they get your baseline at the start of the season. And then when you do suffer potential head trauma, they go back to a similar series of questions, in addition to looking for some of these other symptoms that are prominent when you suffer some type of head trauma. It's possible. It is completely possible. Like Tua might not have been in the blue tent, like drooling on himself. He may not have been, you know, having some sort of what would be an apparent concussive reaction when they evaluate him either later in the game or after the game. That being said, caution is what's still necessary in these moments as well, where it's not even a full week removed. And then the part of the investigation needs to be, why does some report come out that they're thinking it's a back issue as opposed to head trauma? That's where, to me, because the independent, you know, arbitrator, the independent, evaluator who's a part of this, who got fired by the NFLPA, they're 100% culpable. What to me concerns me is the Dolphins putting information out that it's the back they were concerned about and not the head. That's where, to me, it's apparent that the team has some involvement in pushing a false narrative that Tua was completely fine.
Maybe they could suspend the owner. Oh, no, wait, he's already been suspended. All right, we've got to get to our guy, Ouch. Dan Pompey. Pat, I mentioned the Jay Cutler thing. Is that the worst you've ever seen, a guy taking abuse like that?
By far. Yeah. And it was, you know, he was concussed, but it was Mike Martz wanted to get him out sooner, I believe. He's like, we got to get him out because we got to play the rest of the season with this guy. But that was awful. I mean, just absolutely brutal.
All right, Dan Pompey joins us next. We'll also make our picks. It's the pregame show here on The Score.
I don't know, it's always good. You know, gives the offense the ball back. You know, gives us some more energy, some more juice, some more swagger. So it always goes both ways. You know, it's a momentum changer, and especially when we're at home and the crowd's going crazy too. So it's always great.
We're back with more of the Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook pregame show on Sports Radio 670 The Score with Mully, Patrick Manley, and Anthony Herron. Brought to you by Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook, official sportsbook of the Chicago Bears. Download the Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook app today.
Yes, indeed, it's the pregame show. I believe that was Jaquan Brisker talking about takeaways, and that is the one area where the coach wants to see more things happening out of the hits principle. Matt Eberflus wants those takeaways, and it will be important today. It is always a joy to welcome in our guy, Dan Pompey. He, of course, his name is written in the Hall of Fame, and he joins us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Dan, good morning. How are you?
Wonderful, guys. Good to be with you today. Should be an exciting game. We're going to find out a little bit more about the Bears today, I think.
The takeaways, I mean, just the way they play, if they win the battle of takeaways, they got a really good chance of winning the game.
You know, what's interesting is, you know, we think about this battle of takeaways as something that you can control defensively, which you can to a degree, but they really haven't been hurt too much yet by turning the ball over offensively. And you wonder if that day is coming, especially with the way Justin Fields has been a little careless with the football, both in terms of throwing the ball and handling the ball. You know, they've had a number of fumbles that they've recovered themselves. You know, their interceptions haven't seemed to kill them in most cases. They've been able to overcome them. You know, but if you keep playing with that fire, pretty soon you're going to get a big burn on your hand and on the rest of your body. So, you know, that part of it to me is going to be very interesting to watch as we move forward today and in the future.
Yeah, I think the defense has been opportunistic to, you know, when they've helped out the offense in that situation. And one player that's been doing that with two interceptions already is Eddie Jackson. But I'd love to hear your take on his play so far this year. And just kind of give your evaluation of him.
Yeah, I think, Patrick, to me, he's been playing as well as he's ever played in his life. And it's not just what he's doing on the ball. It's beyond that, too. I think, you know, he seems to be taking good angles. He seems to be tackling well. He seems to be focused. He seems to be, you know, playing really good football. I mean, he's not the kind of tackler that Jamal Adams is or somebody like that. You know, he's never going to be that guy. But if he's where he's supposed to be and he's getting the guy on the ground for the most part, he's making the opponent worry about him stripping the football. I think we've seen that. You know, he's doing a really good job, and I think he's been really a key player in that defense so far.
Dan, one thing that that it feels like has occurred to me throughout the week here, I was talking to Mully and Patrick about it a few minutes ago, it feels to me like our patience with the quarterback position, with looking at a first-round QB develop, is a little more frayed, you know, a little shorter with Fields here early on than it was perhaps a few years ago. And I feel like, you know, Bears fans and Bears evaluators are carrying that Trubisky shrapnel, you know, the post-Trubisky stress disorder. I termed it on Twitter a few minutes ago. I feel like carrying that into looking at Justin Fields still early in his career. Do you feel like, you know, the patience in the evaluation of Fields is any shorter by comparison? And if so, do you think the Trubisky hangover would be a factor in that?
Well, I don't know if it's Trubisky hangover, but after 75 years of looking for a quarterback, and that's I think Bears fans are understandably a little frayed with their nerves. No, that is a good point, though, Anthony, and I really do. I do believe that there probably is less patience and more, you know, skepticism about whatever quarterback lines up if he's not having quick success. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a factor, you know, and when a city turns on a quarterback, you know, the team usually is best advised to turn the page, even if they don't believe that quarterback is completely done developing or they believe that the quarterback can turn around, you know, because that's a big deal. You know, you need to have the support, I think, of the city. You know, it helps to have good media, helps to have a good vibe around the player. And it's difficult to do that when everybody is against the quarterback.
Yeah, Sid Luckman syndrome. I like it, Dan. That's really interesting. So listen, so we are now three games into the Roquan Smith, you know, bet on yourself year. And I'd say he's winning after last week. We had a conversation on the pregame show about the idea that there is a business decision that he has to weigh. He played great, 16 tackles, 2 for loss, that game-changing interception. It's those wow plays that will get him in the Pro Bowl and that will get him the money he's looking for. Where are you at with Roquan and what he achieved last week and where he is right now?
Yeah, again, I think
he right now he's playing as Eddie is, like one of the best players in the league at his position. And what's interesting is, you know, he's in a little bit of a different scheme, and he's playing a little bit of a different position. And we saw Darius Leonard, now Shaquille Leonard, play the same position and make a lot of big plays. So maybe more of those big plays are coming. You know, maybe Roquan's motivated like never before. Maybe he's at a point in his career where, you know, things are moving more slowly for him. You know, he's kind of in a sweet spot in terms of where your athletic ability and your age and your, you know, understanding of the game all really come together. So I really think that he could continue to make a lot of big plays this season and put himself in a very good position in terms of the off season with negotiating for a new contract.
I got to get off the Giants a little bit. We talked about it. Maybe you can do it shortly here, but I always love your perspective on NFL issues. And we talked about Tua and the concussion issue. What's your thoughts on how that was handled and what's going on?
Yeah, you know, I'm a little, there's been a lot of like really quick judgments with this thing. And I'm really not sure what to think yet, because obviously the people who were involved with all the decisions with Tua had more knowledge of his condition than we did. It doesn't mean they made the right choices, or it doesn't. I guess the other thing is this, you know, just because you're following the rules the way they're supposed to be followed and you're checking all the boxes doesn't mean you're doing the right thing, right? And I think it definitely is a healthy situation to revisit the rules and to ask yourself, you know, is this right? Do we need to make things different, more stringent? And then it also is important to say, you know, what's in the best interest of a human being above and beyond the rules? And is he being served the best way? You know, I think that's so important in any company, right? It, beyond football, you think about any company in the world. You know, you have to. Part of fostering, people talk about good culture. Well, there's nothing more important to good culture than taking care of your employees, right? And making sure that they walk away with a positive experience and that, you know, they come back happy. You know, you don't want to alienate people and, you know, on all sides. You know, the paying customers, your players, everyone. And I think it's a big, important issue for the NFL. And you know, I think it's something they're learning more about all the time, and they have to keep trying to improve at it.
Dan, thanks a ton. Who'd you pick?
I got the Giants in a close one, guys. I got them winning 2019. I don't know if the Bears are going to miss their kicker today. You know, that's going to be a factor, I think.
Thank you, Dan. We appreciate it. Let's go around the horn, guys. Patrick, who did you take?
I've got the Bears winning this one 13-10. I just don't see a lot of points scored. Maybe the new kicker hits the game winner to beat the New York Giants in MetLife Stadium.
Anthony?
Give me the Bears as well. I'll take them 17-14. I think they make it happen on the road.
These scores are hilarious. All right.
I think that's what we're going to see.
I guess we're not having the breakthrough game we were hoping for from the passer. All right, make sure you get back after the game. Anthony will be here with the post. It is the pregame show. Here's hoping. Go Bears. It is Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 in the Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay. Picture this, it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it.
I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.